Hey, I'm Brett Podolsky, co-founder of The Farmer's Dog. We make fresh food for dogs. We started the company when we saw what a huge difference it made in my own dog, Jada, when she stopped eating ultra-processed kibble and started eating fresh, whole food. The Farmer's Dog food isn't fancy. It's just real food delivered to your door in pre-portioned packs. It's better for them and easier for you.
Get 50% off your first box at thefarmersdog.com/podcast. That's thefarmersdog.com/podcast.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It is the pod of thunder and rock and roll. And today, gonna get some chills running up your spine. I got the true story behind The Conjuring, the first Conjuring movie, Conjuring 2, one of the most popular movies in the world today. How did The Conjuring, how real was it? How true was the true story? Well, I've got someone who's going to tell us. Andrea Perrin lived in the haunted Harrisville, Rhode Island farmhouse that inspired The Conjuring. She and her family lived there for 10 years, experienced many hauntings, apparitions, strange events, possessions, things that go bump in the night. I know you guys like my paranormal shows. This one is going to blow your mind. Andrea is going to share her story today, talk about what it was like having paranormal investigators Ed and Lorraine Warren come to her family's home multiple times while they lived there. She'll talk about what the movies got right, what was different, and what was too scary to include in the movie. Yeah, it's pretty creepy stuff. You'll find out how her family found the farmhouse, why they continued to live there after everything started happening. Fascinating, chilling episode with Andrea Perrin talking about her experiences growing up in the house that was that made The Conjuring famous, okay? Very, very powerful, very, very scary, very, very riveting. And talking about riveting, I got something here, a documentary that's just as powerful as The Conjuring, just as riveting as The Conjuring, but in a totally different way. I'm talking about The Resurrection of Jake the Snake. Documentary was put together by Diamond Dallas Page, my good friend. It's seriously one of the best documentaries I've ever seen, and it's unbelievable. Story about one man's battle back from certain death to reclaim his life, his family, his career. This is one of those types of movies. It doesn't matter if you're a wrestling fan or not. You are going to walk away from this documentary shaken and also feeling inspired. You're going to laugh, cry, cheer, and you will love the end of this documentary where Jake gets his redemption, so to speak. Okay, it's now out on DVD. And Blu-ray. Dallas and his crew have put tons of time and work into the collector's edition DVD of this Resurrection of Jake the Snake documentary. It's got 20 bonus features, including a commentary track narrated by Dallas himself and Jake and director Steve Yeun. And right now you can get the collector's edition of the Resurrection of Jake the Snake at ddpyoga.com/Jericho. And if you use my promo code Y2J, you get 10% off anything you buy for a limited time. You have got to see this documentary, be inspired, be influenced, get strong, man, and then give DDP Yoga and the DDP Yoga Now app a try yourself. Get into the best shape you can be in, mentally, physically. Take advantage of the special deal exclusively for you Talk is Jericho sexy beasts. ddpyoga.com/Jericho, ddpyoga.com/Jericho, and please check out The Resurrection of Jake the Snake. I guarantee you will not be disappointed. This is a movie that will stay with you for the rest of your life. I guarantee it. Okay, so it's funny. I'm here with Andrea Perrin and talking about The Conjuring, which was based on your family's experiences in, for lack of a better term, in a haunted house. And I'm actually in your house. And I told my wife that I was going. She goes, "Well, is that house haunted too?" I said,
"Yes,
it is too.
Yes,
we actually are in a haunted house."
Yes.
Why is this one haunted as well?
Why is any house haunted? I think that mostly it revolves around a living mortal being that simply didn't want to leave yet or wasn't prepared to let go of what held them, attached them to earth. I think sometimes ghosts exist because they've either died tragically or so suddenly that they don't even realize that they're dead. And a lot of times, as with the farmhouse up in Harrisville, many of the spirits that we had in that house died either by their own hand, or they were murdered, or, you know, there were extenuating circumstances that were quite gruesome around their death. And considering that that house is almost 300 years old now, it just seems to me that back in that time, religion was, so people were so grounded, so rooted in the idea that if they took their own lives, that they would burn in hell forever, that perhaps they don't cross because if they're going to the light, they don't know what that light represents.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that that probably has something to do with it. But I'll tell you the truth, Chris, there are no experts in the paranormal. If my family doesn't know what we're dealing with, no one on this planet does, because we lived in that environment steeped in it for a full decade. And I'm 57 now, and we moved in there when I was 12 years old, and I still can't tell you what I saw, but I can tell you that it wasn't an optical illusion. It certainly wasn't a figment of our imagination, and it gave me a feeling of comfort to know that there is something beyond our mortal existence.
Mm-hmm. When you're talking about hauntings, and, like, you know, if you're following movie lore, for example, you know, you talk about, like, let's say Paranormal Activity, where it's not the house that's haunted, it's the person that has some kind of a spirit attached to them. Is that something that happens? Is it possible that you have some kind of a spirit attached to you, which is, like, everywhere you have, has everywhere you live been haunted?
Well, when I moved in with my sister Christine in Georgia in 2008, I moved in there to write the trilogy because I wanted to be with my mother and close to my family. And a couple of years later, after a number of incidents had occurred, she put me up against a wall, and she's like half my size. And she said, you know, my house wasn't haunted until you moved into it.
Wow.
And my sister, Nancy, she only lives up in Inverness. She's only an hour from here. And she says, honey, every time you come, I just love when you come to visit me, but you always leave something behind. And then I have to deal with it for weeks until I sage and I clear the house. And, you know, so yes,
wow.
I think all of us have spirit around us, whether it be our ancestors, loved ones who have passed that watch over us.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm a freaking magnet for them. And I don't know why, but I welcome them and I feel no fear about it whatsoever. In fact, that's part of my message, is the fear actually holds us back from living fully. And we, as earthbound mortals, are far more powerful than anything that comes from the netherworld. If our family could survive what we went through for a decade in that farm, then anybody can overcome anything. So my message is of hope, and to dispel the fear around it. And I know that sounds counterintuitive to studying the paranormal, but it really isn't. Because if everything is one thing, if all existence is one thing, then what we're doing when we have an encounter with spirit, we are glimpsing the place, the realm from which we come and to which we will return. So we're all connected, all of us are, even in the spirit world.
I think, too, from talking with some other people that are similar to you, Zach Bagans and Amy Bruni, there seems like
I love Amy. She's
great.
A friend of mine, yeah.
But once again, told me that sometimes she gets people, or spirits are attached to her and taking them home from work, so to speak.
Yeah.
I guess certain people just have that, a conduit. You're a conduit to the other side.
I think so. And I welcome that. It's not something that I would ever want to make go away. You know what I mean? But the thing is that once the door to the spirit world is kicked wide open, you might as well have removed it from its hinges. You can pretend it doesn't exist, but once you're touched by spirit, you're touched by spirit. And my first encounter was with a full body apparition that was so clear that he appeared to me to be in solid human form, just dressed funny. And right when I walked into the house, the day we moved into the farm.
The farm when you were 12 years old.
Yes.
And what state was that in?
In Harrisville, Rhode Island.
Rhode Island, okay.
Mm-hmm. And he appeared perfectly solid to me. And I realized that I could see multidimensionally, that I could see interdimensionally. And that was the thing that was so fascinating about the farmhouse, because it really is a portal cleverly disguised as a farmhouse. And I don't know exactly what creates that effect, if it's just, you know, compiling history and years and deaths and, you know, births and deaths. I mean, before we moved into that house, 8 generations of one extended family lived and died in that farmhouse. And I guarantee you, Chris, at least a dozen of them never left.
Hmm. When you moved to that house, do you remember your parents or anybody knowing that there was some weird stuff happening in it or something? Or did you just buy it and here's our new house and let's go inside?
We visited the house a number of times before we actually moved in. My mom found it in June of 1970. And my father immediately, he was on a business trip. And she emptied the family bank account to put earnest money down on this farm. 200 acres, a colonial era farmhouse, a big, huge barn, absolutely paradise, gorgeous. And when he got home, he's like, Carolyn, what have you done? And how do we get the money back? And she said, just look at it. So he piled all of us into the old Bonneville, which was new at the time. And we all drove up to the farm, and we all fell madly, madly in love with the place. It called to us. In fact, I remember crying when we left because I didn't want to leave. And years later, my mother said, I think we bought this farm because of you, because I had had an apparition appear in front of me that was dressed in 17th century clothing, that was the identical image of me, the woman you're looking at right now, only as an elderly woman with her hair completely gray, pulled up in a bun, same exact facial features. And she smiled at me like she had been watching over me for hundreds of years. It was the most incredible experience. It was my moment of epiphany at the farmhouse. And
this is when this is what you were talking about earlier, the full body spirit that you saw the moment you went
in? No, that was a man, yes.
Okay, so when did you see this lady?
I was on my 17th birthday.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And I had just come home from college. I was just about to turn 18. And my dad flew me in from Pittsburgh. I was going to Chatham College. And he it was a 3-day weekend. It always falls on the Columbus Day weekend. And I was freezing cold. And I didn't understand why I was so cold. And so I went and backed up in front of the fireplace, which was roaring even in October. You had to have a fire up there. And when I did that, the whole right side of my body turned to a slab of ice. And my father, who was sitting at the dining room table in the adjacent room, dropped his fork. It hit the china plate. And he said, Annie, someone's come to welcome you home. And I turned and I looked at her and I was like, oh, Mother of God. Oh, my God. It's me. A mirror image reflection of me as an old woman. And she, and the kindness in her eyes, I felt the love. It was so intense.
But why is it you? Is it you coming back to see yourself, or did the ghost just make herself look like you? Or
I, you know what? No, I reason. Wish I could answer that for you. I wish I could answer it for myself. I really do. And George will be the first one to tell you, my para partner, he'll be the first one to tell you that spirits can literally conjure up their own images, that you know, you can have a poltergeist, you can have a doppelganger, you can have, you know, there are different ways that they can manipulate things. And I know that that's true, because we saw it happen over and over and over again at the farm. I would have to talk to you for 12 straight hours to scratch the surface of what happened in that house.
Well, let's tell us, you know, when you said you moved in when you're 12, when do you start realizing that there's things that are not normal going on here?
Immediately. All the times that we visited the house, we never had anything untoward happen. We visited probably 5 or 6 times before we actually bought the house in December of 07 and then moved in January of 71. And we never had anything happen there, nothing that would have indicated to us that we were purchasing a haunted house. And we had all kinds of things drawing us to the place, in terms of Mr. Kenyon wanting us to have it. The fact that no one else ever called on that piece of property in the 6 months that it was advertised, because the realtor had bought a 6 month chunk of advertising to keep the house, even though my mother had put earnest money down until the closing, they were still advertising it. No one ever called on that property to see it besides my mother. There were so many things that drew us to the house, but it was really, you have to go back a little bit further than that, because there were a series of very, very unfortunate events that occurred at our home in Cumberland, Rhode Island, approximately a year to a year and a half before we actually bought the farm, that catapulted us to that farm, which is why in my trilogy of books, House of Darkness, House of Light, the first book starts when we're still a normal family prior to becoming a paranormal family, because all of these extremely unfortunate things happened to the point where my mother threw her hands up in the air and said, I'm out of here and I'm taking my kids. I want a place in the country where they can be raised in a proper environment. And that's what really caused us to make the move.
Some paranormal type stuff happening at the house?
No, okay. It wasn't. It was normal, heinous human behavior.
Gotcha.
And
So you wanted to get out of the city and go out into the country.
Yeah, and right. And we really weren't even living in the city. We were living in a suburb of Providence, but it was, you know, very countrified. It was very pretty. We had a beautiful house, a beautiful piece of land, but it was like everything went crazy around us. And a couple of years before my mother actually found the house, you know, from The Conjuring, Bathsheba Sherman copped all the blame for everything, right?
Those
you know
names, the major spirit.
Right, yeah. Which that's not true, and I'll clarify that for you later. But interestingly, she was attached to the house, and she was accused of murdering an infant in her care in that house. She was a spirit that we interacted with, but she wasn't the one that was tormenting my mother. However, a couple of years before my mom even found the house, my dad came home one evening with a beautiful puppy, an African Basenji, a very unusual breed of dog. And my mom swept her up into her arms and she said, this is a very special dog. She deserves a special name. And she closed her eyes and she put her head to the sky and she came back with Bathsheba. Well, we were all little kids. We never heard that name. We didn't know the biblical reference. We immediately abbreviated it to Sheba. But my mother named that dog Bathsheba, and it was her horrific death in my care that made such a change in me that she...
The puppy's death?
The puppy died. Well, she was full grown when it happened. But it was horrible.
What happened?
I asked if I could take her for a walk, and she got away from me, and she was hit by a car. There were some kids that had come from the high school, and there had been like some kind of an event, homecoming or something, and they had pom-poms, and they were flying them out the back of the windows of the car. And she bolted away from me on Diamond Hill Road in Cumberland, Rhode Island, which is a pretty busy stretch. And I immediately screamed her name, and she turned to follow my direction to come back to me in a car in the opposing direction, hit her. And thankfully, there was a police officer that saw the whole thing. He got out of his car, and he put 3 bullets in her brain to put her out of her misery, but I saw it.
That affects you to this day, right? So you have these horrible events that are happening. You want a new change, so you're going to go out and live... in the country.
Go live among the dead, you know. Let's just go move and live out among the dead. You know, The Conjuring has a lot of discrepancies in it, Chris. There are
Tell us about just before you get it. Like, so The Conjuring, like we see this movie, and it's a terrifying movie. It's such a huge hit because it legitimately is scary. And I'm sure you watching it, based on your family story, some of the stuff happened, some of it did not happen, and a lot of discrepancies, like you said. So what are some of those that you're about to say?
Well, one of the things that was interesting is that before we moved there, I was given another dog. And I didn't even put it in the books because I thought this was going to be so morose, it would break the hearts of my readers before they even got into the story. And yet, the cosmic kisses... that exist in The Conjuring. James Wan, that whole cast and crew worked tirelessly to tell our story to the best of their ability, unable to compress 10 years into 2 hours. They did their best. Mm-hmm. And of course, most of the story was conjured in the screenwriters' minds, because it was more story than they could tell. It was based on the case files of Ed and Lorraine Warren, not on my books. There wasn't a single scene in The Conjuring that comes from any of my 3 books. Mm. But one of the things that we found very heart-wrenching and also fascinating is the number of little cosmic kisses that exist in that film. It's amazing.
Meaning, what's a cosmic kiss?
It told me that from the universe, that it was okay that the story wasn't accurate, because that movie got our story out, or at least elements of our story out into the world in ways that nothing else could have. A $500 million film, yeah. And another one in the offing. Not about our story, but still it continues the saga of Ed and Lorraine. But if you remember at the beginning of that film, their little dog Sadie dies inexplicably in the yard. We weren't at the farm 2 weeks and my dog got killed.
Oh, wow. Again.
He ran up to meet us at the school bus. The roads were icy. He slipped on the ice and went right underneath the back wheel of the school bus and died in my arms.
Oh, my goodness.
And I'll tell you, I couldn't even put it in the books, and yet it ended up in the movie. When we're done with the interview, I'm going to go into my office and get you a picture of a folk art drawing of a white cat. Now, if you remember in the film, when the camera comes around into Shanley Caswell's bedroom, who played me, The same exact picture is up on the mantle in her bedroom. Mm-hmm. And nobody at Warner Brothers or New Line Cinema knew that I was in possession of that, or that my mother's friend, Fran, had given that to me while we lived at the farm for my 13th birthday. Mm-hmm. And I have it all these years later as a precious keepsake from my days at the farm. Mm-hmm. And from Fran, who's passed away. And I almost came out of my skin. I mean, Lorraine Warren was sitting right next to me, because Warner Brothers was gracious enough to fly us out to Hollywood to have a private screening of the film several months before it opened. And all we did was pass a box of tissues back and forth between each other, because it was very emotional for her, too. I mean, Lorraine had told Ed on his deathbed, at his request, that she would do everything in her power to get our story told before she joined him, mm-hmm. because he always insisted that our story, of all the decades of investigations that they conducted, he always said ours was the most significant, the most disturbing, the most intense, and the most profound of all of the investigations that they ever conducted. And they were well aware that they were in over their heads right from the inception, right from the moment they crossed the threshold.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first 3 orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Tell us some stuff. If you mentioned that a lot of stuff in The Conjuring did not happen, what did happen?
Well, there was no exorcism. Mm-hmm. If my mother was quote-unquote possessed, it was for a very short amount of time. I think of what happened to my mother as being attacked. And I blame the medium that the Warrens brought to the house. They rather foisted a seance on my parents, insisting that my mother was suffering in the throes of oppression, which was one step away from possession. And, you know, they only came to our house 5 times. We lived there 10 years. There were many, many things that they didn't know about, but they did see plenty when they did come. And what they saw was that my mother was changing. She was dressing in vintage clothing. She was speaking usage of language that was archaic. She would refer to the guys in town as the yeomen. You know, that's not a word that mm-hmm. we use in current day English. She was changing, and she was suffering because there was a spirit in that house, which we think was more likely Mrs. Arnold, who died in the late 1700s by hanging herself in the barn once her husband died. And she's the one, I think, that perceived herself to be the mistress of the house. And she felt some type of competition or threat from my mother.
Oh, I see.
And she loved my father, and she coveted us, the five children. Now, she never walked up to us and said, hello, my name is. So we don't know for certain. It's really conjecture and speculation on our part as well. But knowing a little of the history of the house that my mom researched before Mrs. Warren took her her research and all of her records, and she had a whole notebook full of sketches and writing about the apparitions that occurred in the house, and Mrs. Warren took it to make copies but never gave it back. And I think she didn't because she considered it a haunted item, much like John Zaffis's collection, that things can have attachments as well as people. So I don't hold that against her. I think that she had our best interest at heart. I know Ed did. The Conjuring got it right in big ways. Good conquers evil. Love conquers fear. The Perrin family endured an extreme haunting that they all survived. That's the big picture. They used in the film out of 25,000 plus different styles of wallpaper, they happened to choose the one that was in our farmhouse at the time. What is that? That's divine intervention. You know, I almost had a nervous breakdown when I found out that James Wan was at the helm of this project.
Why is that?
Because I had never seen any of his work. I knew it only by reputation. But
like
I
Saw
immediately got on the phone with the executive producer, Rob Cohen, who, well, actually, he called me to say that James Wan took the project. And I was like, are you kidding me? The king of slasher porn is going to make our movie? Are you kidding me? I mean, my head blew off. I had no control over it. I had signed over control on behalf of my whole family to Warner Brothers and trusted that they would do a good job. And, you know, I had to eat my words and take all of it back because James Wan is one of the most sensitive, mature, articulate, and intelligent human beings I have ever encountered. And I know that The Conjuring 2 is going to be at least as good as the first one because just from the little bit of it that I've seen, it maintains that same vein. And yes, there's a lot of, there will be discrepancies in that film too, you know, and there are a lot of people that say, oh, come on, the Warrens hardly had anything to do with the Enfield case. Well, that's not true because I know John Zaffis very well, who is Ed's nephew. And he gave me a lot of information that he got directly from Ed after they did that investigation. So I'm hoping that they stick to the story as closely as they can.
Sure. Let me ask you this. You said earlier that the Warrens, when they were investigating and studying the farmhouse, were in over their head. In what way were they in over their head?
Well, first of all, we never called them to come. My mother never called anybody to come and help us. She didn't want us advertising it in any way, shape, or form once
Because you're seeing spirits, is there, you know, is it the classic, you know, dishes being thrown around the house?
It's everything. You name it, it happened. It's amazing. I mean, honestly, it's amazing. Everything happened. We had bot flies, a total infestation of bot flies in the house in January, in winter, in Rhode Island. Nothing's alive. You know, we had two exterminators come and said, they're not breeding in this house. We do not understand where these are coming from.
Wow.
And the day that my mother sat my father down and said, Roger, we have a situation in this house and we have to talk about it, because he was king of denial. He's like, oh, come on, you know, please. And she said, and honest to God, Chris, there were hundreds of them in the house. They all died at once the moment my mother said, there's a spirit in this house and she's after me. And when Mrs. Warren came in October of 1973 with her husband, and my mother told her about the infestation of bot flies and how they all died at once in one day, when my mother confronted my father about what was going on in the house, she looked at my mother and she said, Carolyn, don't you understand, dear? You can't really kill what's already dead. They were harbingers of things to come. You know, Mrs. Warren was is, you know, deeply connected with spirit. And she's the one that came into the house. Keith Johnson went and got the Warrens and had them come to our house. My mother never called anybody. We don't still to this day understand how Keith Johnson and his group, Pyro, Paranormal Investigative Group, showed up in our yard. He said, Mrs. Perrin, you called me. And she said, no, I never did. I never called anyone. And yet he and I have been so attached at the hip for 40 years. It was meant to be. And I guess that's the big picture. You know, the cosmic kisses is it was meant to be.
Sure. Were you what did you see with your own two eyes?
I'll tell you something, Chris. I will tell you something that happened in that house that was so extreme that the exorcism scene in The Conjuring pales in comparison to it. I was 15 years old. The Warrens showed up at our house with an entourage of people. My father was livid. He didn't like them. He didn't trust them. He didn't want them there. And he thought that they were going to do nothing but exploit us. And that's not what the case was. But they came. They did not forewarn my mother that they were coming with a priest, with a medium, with professional cinematographers, with audio people. They didn't warn her. They just showed up. Well, four of the five of us kids were in the house that night. My sister Nancy went to spend the night with a friend, but the rest of us were home. And we were all told to go upstairs. My father had a fight with Ed, said, I don't want this to happen. I don't want this going on in my house. Paranormal Witness did a good job recreating this scene to an extent. But even they were afraid to take it to the full degree. My mother kind of collapsed into almost a comatose state. I mean, she was just, she couldn't even talk. And Mr. and Mrs. Warren took her to the table. My father refused to cooperate. He didn't want to be involved. The medium committed what I consider to be spiritual malpractice. The priest allowed it. She opened wide the doors to the netherworld and beckoned all the spirits to our supremely haunted home so that she could identify who the offending culprit was. That is insane. To do something like that is insane. And what happened in the following minutes, I will never forget for the rest of my life. The table began to tremble. It started lifting off the floor. Now, this was a 200-pound solid rock maple dining room table. It lifted off the floor several inches, and then it slammed down like that. All four legs dented the wood in the floor. It hit so hard. My mother's head dropped, and then she raised it back up, and I didn't recognize who was inside her eyes. I didn't. And I was peeking through a little crack in a door. I didn't follow directions. I snuck right downstairs to see what was going on, and so did my sister Cindy. And we watched all of this transpire. Her body started to curl into a ball, like, and she was sitting in a captain's chair. It had arms on both sides. Her body started to come up as though it was being extricated out of itself and yet compressed into itself to the extent that you would expect to hear bones breaking. She started to growl. She started to moan. She started to cry. Then she howled in a voice that was not her own. And then she started speaking in a language that does not exist on this planet. And whatever it was that was attacking her was grievously injuring her physical form. And then her chair began. Now, this all happened within like a minute. My father was, the priest hopped up from the table, went and put himself in the corner of the room and just trembled. The medium collapsed on the table. Mrs. Warren stared at my mother. And when my mother's chair levitated off the floor, probably at least 2 feet, in a fraction of a second, she, in that chair, was tossed from the middle of our dining room into the middle of our parlor, and everyone present in that house heard my mother's skull hit that floor, and everyone present in that house thought they had just seen Carolyn Perrin killed. My father went to rush to her side. Ed grabbed his arm. Big mistake. And my father turned around and cold-cocked Ed Warren and took him right to the floor. It took my dad, after he threw them out of the house, none of this, obviously, is any remote resemblance to The Conjuring, but this is what actually happened. And it took my dad about an hour to bring my mother back, just begging her to come back. He was taking all of her vital signs, monitoring her. He knew she was alive. Obviously, she suffered a terrible concussion, but nobody wanted, the Warrens did not want the police or an ambulance called. Absolutely not.
Why is that?
Probably because of the bad publicity that would come to them. And also the notoriety that would come to our family. Mm-hmm. I don't know why they didn't want any law enforcement or anybody. That's another thing about the movie. They always had a police officer with them. No, they did not. They had a medium. They had a priest. But you know what? One of the things that was so amazing that night while all of this was happening, the most active area in the house was the cellar. Which, if you can imagine, a dirt cellar with huge slabs of granite walls, all filled with horsehair plaster. The cinematographers had state-of-the-art equipment for that time, 1973, big 35mm cameras, huge tripods, and they had gone into the cellar so that they could try to record any activity that was going on down there during the seance. And when my father told everybody to get out of the house, and believe me, he used some salty language to do it, he was furious. And my mother's laying in a pile in the middle of the parlor, and kids are crying because we all heard and saw everything that had happened. And we're trying to, Mom, please come back to us. Come back to us. It was awful. It was chaos. It was tragic. It was out of control. And Mrs. Warren told the cinematographers to go down into the cellar and to retrieve all of their equipment that they were all leaving. And those two full-grown men, bigger than you, walked up those stairs with sobbing, because all of their equipment had been bashed into thousands of pieces. There wasn't a single item that they had taken into the cellar that was retrievable. They just left it. It was garbage. It was like some force had picked up those cameras, tripod and all, and slammed them against these granite walls. There were thousands of pieces of metal and plastic everywhere. That to me is one of, aside from the fact that my mother almost paid with her life because some people didn't know what they were doing, that to me is one of the most fascinating elements of the story, because there was something going on in that house that did not want to be filmed, did not want to be audiotaped, did not want to be photographed, but certainly wanted to make its presence known, and it did.
Well, I mean, that is just, it's bone-chilling stuff. And what you told me earlier was that you said that the script that Paramount was writing for The Conjuring was not even close to being the original script that you had told them about. It was too tough for them?
I spoke at length. I was a consultant on the film, and I spoke at length with Chad and Carrie Hayes, who were the screenwriters. And when I went out to the site when they were filming in North Carolina in Wilmington, both of them approached me and said, Andrea, we did our best. And they sent the script back 7 times. We tried to use, true elements of your story. And every time that we did, the brass at Warner Brothers said, tone it down. This will run people out of the theaters. We can't use this.
I guess too scary or too...
Yeah.
Is there a certain event that you remember that was taken out?
There isn't a single scene in The Conjuring that comes from our books, from our story, from our memoir.
So what's so scary that they had to take out?
Well, I don't even know how anybody could recreate the scene that I just told you
about. Absolutely, right, sure.
I mean, what kind of CGI that would necessitate. Mm-hmm. But I will tell you that there were a number of incidents in that house, including with the apparition that had a broken neck. And that's why we thought it was probably Mrs. Arnold. Not only the archaic language that she used when she threatened my mother, she came and literally hung over her in her bed. And that was similar. Mm-hmm. But the apparition that they used in The Conjuring wasn't nearly as hideous as the actual one. Her head was hanging off the side of her neck, clearly a broken neck. Her head looked like a desiccated hornet's nest, literally falling to pieces. Sprigs of hair covered in cobwebs, two vacant hollow eyes, thin lips, jagged yellow teeth, and two holes where her nose should be. Now picture that in your face as you're waking up at 5:15 a.m., which is always when our clock would stop. In fact, I can show you the clock. It's just in the next room in our dining room.
It would always stop at 5:15 every morning.
Only when there was a major manifestation in the house.
Oh, I see. I gotcha.
So, and in The Conjuring, they used it at 3:07. So, you know, they tried. They really did try to capture elements of our story. It's just the story is so much bigger and so much more intense than anything that's actually in the movie. And they did deliberately tone it down. I think it's the first time in movie-making history that they didn't embellish and exaggerate a story. They tried to tamp it into something that was more palpable for, you know, the movie-viewing public because it was so intense. And even as it is, it ran people out of the theaters. And the reason that it did was because people were afraid of what might happen because they became emotionally involved in the children characters and they didn't want to see a child hurt. You know, my mother could have taken great exception to this film. My mother would never have done anything.
Is your mother still alive?
Oh, yes, she is, very much so.
Wow. So what did she think about this? What did your father think about the movie?
Well, a couple of things. My mom didn't even watch it until a year after it came out on video. And then one night she said, okay, I'm ready. And, you know, pop it in. And she took great exception. I thought she was going to freak out when she saw the exorcism scene. I really did. I thought that, you know, with the scissors over.
Oh, yeah.
Legs, you know, really? Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, even Chad and Carrie Hayes apologized for that. You know, they said we were basically told, you know, we had to make this life-threatening to one of the kids. My mother would never have jeopardized any of us. She wanted to move out of that farm as soon as she realized what was going on.
Well, who wouldn't?
What? I know. And as everything that conspired to get us there conspired to keep us there. You know, it was just one thing after another. But, you know, that's a whole nother story. Right. But the point is that we had, we had so many incidents that happened in that house that there's no way to encapsulate that in a 2-hour film. So what they tried to do was make it as intense as they could for that short period of time.
Right, sure.
And I really thought that the exorcism scene was going to blow my mother's mind. That's not what she was upset about. First of all, she said, Ed Warren would never, never have attempted to conduct an exorcism on his own. He had way too much respect for the Catholic Church. He was the only layman on the planet that had been trained to assist in an exorcism at that time. And he would never have done something like that. And Lorraine said the same exact thing to me when we were watching the film. Ed would never have done that. I never told them that he did that. Mm-hmm. I said, honey, it's a movie. It's a movie. It's okay. I handed her another tissue. You know, bless her heart. She's 89 years old at the time. You know, her heart. And really what this comes down to, Chris, is that the truth is stranger than fiction. The truth is more intense than anything that they could have put in that film. And I lived it, so I know it. And it's not all darkness. It's not all doom and gloom. There was something incredibly enlightening about living in that farm for 10 years, you know, having the experience. And in fact, you know, I brought a lot of that to the writing. I tried very hard not to let it be just a series of scary stories. I wanted to tell the story in a different way, in a bigger way, in a bolder way that really incorporates a lot of the scientific study around the paranormal and anything about the supernatural that we can come at the who, what, when, where, why, and how is this happening in our realm, that there is no veil, that there really is no separation between our realm and the netherworld. Not if these things could have happened to us. And actually, I'll tell you what, I incorporated a little bit of that into my new book with George in a flicker. It's got a little wicked twist of supernatural, even though it's based in history predominantly. Mm-hmm. It's got a supernatural twist because everything is one thing. You know, to spirits, they don't have any sense of time. They don't have any sense of place, even. I think that they have attachments to places that they will manifest in, like the farmhouse. If they loved it half as much as we loved it, I understand.
Is that why they're staying to haunt you? Like, what is, I mean, in your opinion, causing all of this activity to be happening in your farmhouse?
Well, if you were to ask George, he would say we were five energy-laden prepubescent children that were feeding the beast. And that could very well be.
Well, the beast thrives off the energy of children?
Yes. And in fact, Mr. and Mrs. Warren were most concerned, not about my mother, but about us, because they insisted that we were the ones that were most vulnerable in that house. And they were probably right about that, because I'll tell you what, even though my mother had three physical attacks, and she didn't think, she said, well, you know, even if we live with spirits, they can't really hurt you. And she changed her mind about that. She said, I was wrong about that. There was real danger in that house. And not only was my mother physically attacked three times, aside from the seance, and whatever it was, I won't even call it a demon. I don't know what a demon is, Chris. I don't. Mm-hmm. I've never seen a demon. I think that human beings are too quick to categorize things and place labels. Mm-hmm. But it was pure unadulterated evil that attacked my mother that night. Pure unadulterated evil that crept into her body, spoke through her, and then tossed her as though she was meaningless 20 feet from one room into another, and could have cost her life.
Sure.
And you know what? It had all the power that it needed to kill her. It didn't want to kill her. It wanted to make its presence known to Ed and Lorraine Warren, to the priest, to the medium, to our family. It wanted to make sure that everyone there saw exactly what happened and would never forget it for the rest of our lives.
Was there ever a time when you felt in danger?
No. Not once. My concerns were really for my mother. Mm. I saw my mother deteriorating, losing weight. My father felt helpless and out, you know, had no control over the environment in which his family was living. It was at a time when our economy was crashing. If you think 08 was bad, I don't know if you're old enough to remember 1972, 3, 4. I mean, we, you know, oil embargo,
right,
gas
sure,
lines,
yeah.
Our the price of the value of our property was losing value monthly. There was no way for us to get out of that farm without financially crippling.
Is that why you stayed for so long? You said 10 years you were there?
Yeah, 10 years we were there. And after a while, after the seance, whatever it was that came into that house that night was so powerful and so mean-spirited that it literally scared the ghosts. The house was quiet for months afterwards. Nothing happened for months
afterwards. So like it scared away kind of the low-hanging fruit ghost because the real boss was in town?
That's a great way to put it, yeah.
So then when did they start creeping back in after four months?
Yes, they did. My sister Cindy is the one, actually, that had, other than my mother, she had the most intense experiences. And when we moved to Georgia in 1980, it fractured our family because half of us never wanted to leave the farm, myself included, and half of us never wanted to go back.
Mm-hmm.
My sister Cindy took our horses down to Georgia to the new farm prior to my arrival home from my graduation from college. And when we moved 2 weeks later, it was about middle of June when we got down to Georgia, and I walked into the house and Cindy had just made a pot of coffee and we were exhausted. It was such a long trip. And it did my heart good to see all the horses out in the back pasture and everything. We walked in the house. As I was approaching the house, Cindy was standing in like a floor-to-ceiling window, and she was standing there with a cup of coffee, and I saw the apparition behind her.
Oh my gosh.
And that's when I realized that there was no escape, that we could leave the farm, but the farm will never leave us.
Hmm.
And I walked into the house and I said, Cindy, are you okay? And she seemed oblivious to the fact that she had this apparition standing right behind her. Similar to what I saw standing behind Nancy on the front porch when we left the farm, because Nancy refused to move with us. She went to the new owners and volunteered to stay on as the caretaker of that farm. She refused to leave.
Hmm.
So she didn't come with us to Georgia initially. Everybody else did. And I walked in the house, a new house to me. I'd never been there before. And Cindy said, fresh pot. At which, you know, fresh coffee, mm-hmm. we're all addicted to coffee. Mm-hmm. It is the nectar of the gods, after all. And I said, Cindy, there's something with you. And she said, I know. She said, but you know what? It doesn't matter, because before I left that farmhouse, I mixed it up with pure evil. I danced with the devil, and I lived to talk about it. Mm-hmm. And her little green eyes, oh, God.
Mm-hmm. To survive that, anything else compared to it is nothing.
She was tossed like a rag doll. Mm. She really got into it.
Your sister did too.
My sister, yes, wow. My sister Cindy was tossed like a rag doll. She had my four-poster solid oak bed just lifted up and just thrown around the room, thrown around. She was hanging onto the post, mm-hmm. just screaming and screaming and screaming, and no one heard her. And that was one of the most terrifying things in that house, is you could be in the midst of spiritual warfare, and you could be 20 feet away from a family member, and they wouldn't hear what was happening to you. It was a vortex. It was like a portal. And it still is. And I'll tell you one of the most fascinating things about that farmhouse, Chris. I know two people who are both profoundly sensory impaired. One is almost blind and one is almost deaf. And both of them have visited that farm. And when they walk in that house, their senses are completely restored. And when they leave that house, the impairment immediately returns. What is that?
Mm. I mean, yeah, I'd like to know. It's incredible.
I wish I had the answers, but someday I will have that farm back. And when I do, I will open it to everyone. I want everyone who's seriously into paranormal research, into spiritualism, into just wanting to understand as much as I do what it was that we experienced for a decade of our lives. And I can't help it. I think I really do believe that the irrefutable piece of evidence in the paranormal community, the piece of evidence that silences the skeptics and makes their jaws hit the floor, is coming out of that house. Mm-hmm. I just know it.
Who owns it now?
A woman named Norma Sutcliffe owns the house now. And unfortunately, after 28 years of a wonderful friendship that I had with her, when the movie came out, she just did a complete 180. I mean, this is a woman who had, I don't know how many paranormal investigative teams come into the house over decades that she's lived there, including the Ghost Hunters. If you go back and watch season 2, episode 7 of the Ghost Hunters, the Sutcliffe investigation, John Zaffis and Grant Wilson and Jason Hawes and the whole crew was in that house for one night, and they got so much evidence that it was mind-blowing. Mm-hmm. When the movie came out, she said, well, first of all, she turned on my family, and she knew exactly. She bought that house because of its reputation. She's the one that turned the producer who contacted her about making The Conjuring, gave him my phone number to contact me. He called her looking for me.
So the producer farm. Somehow found out that house had a lot of activity.
Because I already had my first book out.
Because you had written your book, yeah.
No, I didn't have my first book out then. Norma knew I was writing the books and had been very encouraging to me. When the movie came out, it's like it blew her mind. The lunatic fringe came out. Mm-hmm. You know, the kids started trespassing, imposing themselves upon them. And yes, I'm very sorry that happened, but my readers didn't do that.
Right.
But she went to the Associated Press and said, Andrea never told me there was going to be a movie. What? Mm-hmm. What? You know, what? Mm-hmm. I have 6 hours of B-roll of her talking endlessly about experiences that she had in that farmhouse. Endlessly. Mm-hmm. And yet she just denied all of it, said, everybody go away, no ghosts here. And now she's suing Warner Brothers for unspecified damages, and I don't know how many other people. I don't think I'm on the list because I'm legally completely protected by a piece of paper she signed years ago. When I was writing the books, and I said, can I use, you know, pictures of the farm? And I would go up and, you know, take video and audio and, you know, photographs and, you know, so she really can't touch me on that. But my readers aren't the ones that exploited her. It was the followers of the film.
Of the movie. But your goal is you want to buy this house back at some point.
Oh, yeah. At some point, I really, you know, I don't know if it'll be 10 years from now, 20 years. I don't know if, you know, when and if I can. I know she won't sell it to me. Mm-hmm. So I'll have to wait till she sells it and then try to buy it from somebody else, I guess. I don't know. But, you know, she fractured our friendship. I'll never trust her again. She's done everything that she can in her power to delegitimize our story, and really all she's done is discredit herself. You can't, you know, you can, and I'll tell you what, here's the fact of it. You can't live with spirit and deny them and expect that there will be no ramifications for that. She seems to me to have just gone off the deep end, and I'm very sorry about that, and I pray for her every day, but I didn't do it to her, and neither did my family.
When you talk about how you mentioned how your sister moved to the house and there was an apparition, you mentioned that this house here is haunted. What have you seen in the house that we're sitting in right now?
Okay. Look over on the top. Now, this happened a few months ago when George was down here visiting. See all that stuff on the top of the refrigerator there? On the nice flat refrigerator?
Yeah, there's like a parrot. There's a fondue pot.
Split second, all down onto the floor as though it just was shoved and came down onto the floor. And George looked at me and I looked at George and we're like, not a dent in any of that stuff. It should have all been destroyed. I mean, it's thin copper. It should have been at least dented so to the point you throw it out. I have seen full body apparition as a shadow figure in the house. It's a man. He seems relatively benign. He died in this house about 40 years ago. One day, my dad, who you've just met, was standing right here at the bar in the kitchen, and he was paying bills. He's just paying out some bills. Checkbook open. All of a sudden, right behind those flowers, and we've got a big old Oster, what do you call it, food processor thing. It turned on. He screamed like a little girl, honest to God. He did. He's like, Annie, get in here. You know, like, yeah, like I'm supposed to do something about it. And I've had a lot of experiences here. I've had some pretty intense UFO experiences here, too. Florida is a hotbed, but I had my first experience with UFOs when I was 13 years old at the farm. And
interesting.
And I think that there is some...
Is there a tie-in?
Oh, yes. I think there's a point of correlation and integration between extra-dimensional spirit and extraterrestrial life. I do.
In what way?
I don't know. It's part of my research. It's what I'm going on. But I think that they're so... At least the contact that I have had has been very spiritual in nature. The vessels that I have seen are, I feel no threat from at all. And I don't think that they're here to save us, but they're here to encourage us to save ourselves.
You're talking about the spirits or the UFOs?
The ETs. Yeah, they're engaging humanity, and people need to open their minds and open their eyes and look to the skies.
Are you familiar, coming up from Rhode Island, with the Bridgewater Triangle?
Very much so.
I did some research on that last year, and just that whole area of all of the spiritual paranormal activity in all different types, a lot of ghosts, a lot of UFOs, all tied in that
all
area.
All tied in, yes. Yes, and, you know, I think that really we all make a mistake when we think that we're humanity is in a 3D, five sensory realm. I think that we are actually multidimensional beings, that we are essentially spiritual beings who are having a human experience for whatever reason. I think Earth is probably a really big classroom, and that we're here to learn and to evolve and then transcend this space and to go back from whence we came.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the ETs are so evolved beyond anything that we can even perceive or imagine, that that's why I have that sense of integration with them and spirit. You know, what are called the light workers, you know, there are so many different people on this planet that refer to, you know, those of us like myself that talk about this very openly. I don't care what anybody thinks, Chris. I don't have to convince anyone of anything. That's not my job.
Mm-hmm.
My job is to tell my truth. And whoever that resonates with, that's wonderful. And anybody that wants to just dismiss me as just a lunatic, that's fine too. I don't care. It has no impact on me whatsoever. Mm-hmm. But I'll tell you what, I wandered around this planet for decades going, why am I here? Why am I here? I don't belong here. Feeling a sense of abandonment, feeling like I was a misfit, feeling like I didn't know what my purpose was in life. And after living at that farm for 10 years, the only place in my whole life that has ever felt like home, I knew someday I would tell that story and that it would change. Not only would it change my life, but it would change the world. And that's exactly what's happened.
Hmm. How is the world? Like, I mean, I was going to ask this, which ties into what you just said. Once the movie comes out, there's a big spotlight. Everyone knows the Perrin family. Everyone knows the story. And you already kind of writing books about it and being on the cusp of this. Has it really... did it put you on a completely different level? Did you sort of become the go-to girl for paranormal activity conversations at this point?
Yes.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that. But I'll be very forthright with people. I'm not an expert.
Mm-hmm.
No one
is an expert.
You know, so.
But yet you have more experience than anybody else.
I certainly do. And therefore more latitude in terms of my own conjecture. You know, I feel, and I, you know, I speculate, I'm not an intellectual lightweight.
Mm-hmm.
I have always been intellectually precocious, even as a child. The reason that I went and got a degree in philosophy was because I wanted to understand better where I had been plunged into this existence. But it wasn't until the last few years that I finally felt like I had answered the calling, that I was doing what I was supposed to be doing. And that is, for the most part, comforting people and telling them, you know, it's not all doom and gloom. It's, you know, there is light, there is love in the universe, and we are all essentially spiritual beings. And once we understand and start to dispel the fear and start to embrace it for how many times it has saved us, but use it as a tool and not let it manipulate us, that's when we liberate ourselves to live fully and not recklessly, but to live freely.
Mm.
And that's my message. And it really is a spiritual message, as the spirits guide me and support me and surround me. I am absolutely surrounded by light and love all the time. I'm not a woo-woo. I don't espouse any particular religion or, you know, any particular philosophy.
Mm.
I go to church all the time because I live in church. I feel like I really do believe in God. Every one of our family does. That was a big thing. My mother was totally ticked off about in The Conjuring. Sorry to jump,
but
I got to tell you, I thought it was going to be the exorcism scene that blew her brains out. And she's like, nope. I really resent the fact that we were represented as the, you know, the pagan Perrins, the godless heathens, and the Warrens were represented as the holier than thou Roman Catholics. Nothing could have been further than the truth. You've met my dad. Now, you know. And he will tell you that he was born and raised in the Catholic tradition, steeped in it. He served as an altar boy his entire childhood. He was on his way to the priesthood when he met my mother. She converted to Catholicism to marry him. All of us were baptized. All of us were confirmed. And our priest in our parish in Harrisville was so freaked out about what he was hearing about the Perrin family and what was happening at that house, he asked my father to take our family and worship elsewhere.
Wow. As if you were the ones that were causing it.
The Catholic Church turned its back on us, not the other way around.
Wow.
That's what she took exception to. because we're a deeply spiritual family. And I'll tell you another thing, Chris, I'm looking you dead in the eyes right now. It was only the invocation of God that stopped the crises that were occurring in that house. That and only that. When you are a child and you are scared out of your mind and all you can think to say is, God, help me, and you mean it from the core of your soul, whatever was going on stopped instantly. Mm. Every single time without exception.
Wow. A couple more questions before we wrap up. Did you ever have any interaction with anybody from the Lutz family?
Actually, yes.
Because with the Amityville Horrors, people that might not know, the Amityville Horror, the famous other haunted house movie,
case.
Came after your case.
Yep.
Very similar situation. The family was in a house besieged with all these weird things. They make a movie of it, which is probably way more sensationalized than what actually happened. But there would be a connection between your two families.
Well, actually, based on what I know, what happened in that house was more intense than what was shown in the film.
Wow. Okay.
Again, Holly Weird being scared to death of the truth. You know, they'd rather fictionalize it. You know, this is not hyperbole. They're trying to create something that the viewing public will find palpable. And so in that case, their house was... There was something more malevolent in that house than there was in our own.
Hmm. Wow.
Yeah.
Have you ever spoken to anybody that side of the family?
Yes.
You guys ever have, like it seems like you go to a conference together or something?
Actually,
the haunted house conference.
I can't really talk about it yet, but I think something in that vein might be coming to pass, because there are a few of us that walk this earth right now who have lived through the unimaginable, and I think that we're the ones that are best equipped to help comfort
others. That's
what others.
I mean, yeah, sure. Together.
You know, I'm good friends with Carmen Reed from the film A Haunting in Connecticut. Again, Holly Weird doing their thing. You know, what actually happened in that house would blow your mind. You know, Carmen and I have talked at length about truth versus fiction, what really happened, and then how it was presented in film. I will tell you something that not everyone knows, but I'm currently in the midst of writing the screenplay for these three books that are destined to become three absolutely authentic, truth-telling films.
Do your version
of
The Conjuring,
the films,
so to speak. Yeah.
House of Darkness, House of Light. Because this story is more phenomenal than anything that any studio could dream up.
It's a great idea. That's what happened with The Shining, with Stanley Kubrick and The Shining. Stephen King didn't like it.
He didn't like it.
And rewrote the whole
script
the way it was supposed to be. Yeah.
Yep. And I'm doing exactly the same thing. And, you know, and he gives me the big thumbs up, you know, because, and Rice too. Big thumbs up. Yeah.
King and Stephen King knows your story?
Yes. And
Anne Rice
is. Yes. And she's lovely. Oh my God, what a wonderful woman she is. You know, to have famous authors come to me, a number of famous authors reach out to me and tell me that they're fans of my work. It's just, I have to pinch myself. Is this really happening? Am I awake?
Well, you know what I like is that people always ask those guys, like, well, how do you get your ideas with you? How do you get your ideas? Well, it just happened to me. That's how I got the ideas.
Well, Anne Rice said the same thing. In fact, when George and I went out to the, we went last October over Halloween weekend, we premiered our book in a flicker with her at the Vampire Lestat Anne Rice Fan Club Paracon. It's a mouthful. And I had the opportunity to finally meet her in person for the first time. And, you know, and I had sent her, gave her a copy of the book because it had just been published like days before we went, and we're both so thrilled and so proud of In a Flicker. I can't even tell you, it's such an extraordinary story. And she hadn't even read it yet, but she's like, I know it's going to be great. And she took my hands and held my hands in the middle of the church that she attended when she was a child. I think it's St. Alfonso's in New Orleans. And we stood there and talked for about 10 minutes. And I mean, the love that passed between the two of us, the vibration between the two of us was so intense. And at the end, I said, I need to let you go. So many people want to talk with you, Anne. And she just looked at me with love in her eyes. And she said, Andrea, I wish you every blessing. And I said, wait a minute, that's my line. I write that in all my books. And she said, yes, dear, but it was my line first. It was great.
Last question. Are you overall happy that The Conjuring came out?
That, yes. Yeah. Oh, yes. I think that everything happens for a reason. Mm-hmm. Everything does. And that's why, you know, those little things that were in, like the dog dying at the beginning when they didn't even know that had happened.
The cosmic kisses.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. The white cat, the wallpaper, the Cindy running through the house with wind chimes identical to our own that we had hanging on our porch. You know, believe me, Julie, the set designer, had no access to, nor had she any idea that these were actual objects that we had. And yet things, one thing after another, showed up in The Conjuring that they had no idea existed in our family. You know, that to me tells me that there is some type of divine intervention involved here, that there is some type of approval, I guess is the word that this was supposed to happen, or it would have happened another way. Mm-hmm. In the same way that we lived at that farm for 10 years because we were supposed to. And then 30 years later, I was supposed to write this trilogy. Mm-hmm. And then at the end of this trilogy, I was supposed to go into postpartum depression so that George could tell me about this great idea he had called In a Flicker, so that I could distract myself with that for another 18 months. You know, everything happens with purpose and reason. Everything does. Mm-hmm. And so to me, it's all a blessing. It's all divine by nature. All of it.
What a story. What a tale. You're awesome.
Oh, you're awesome, too.
Thank you so much for having me into your haunted house. I'm, like, looking behind me now.
Oh, be not afraid, darling. I'll keep him at bay. Not to worry.
He's going to hide behind you.
Of course.
Thanks so much to Andrea Perrin for having me to her haunted house again and sharing all the stories about the haunted farmhouse she lived in as a kid. As she said, it's her family and their house that inspired The Conjuring through their real-life experiences that were far too scary to include in the actual movies. I'm not going to say a weird vibe, but when I went into her house and she told me it was haunted as well, I know she's a conduit for spirits, it was a little bit creepy to be in that house and to be in her kitchen. And her dad was there, who's very highly represented in the Conjuring movie, just kind of standing in the corner and looking on. It was a little bit creepy, to be honest with you. I was like, I hope they don't kidnap me and stick me in the basement, you know, and tie me up like Saw or something like that. But thankfully, didn't. Great people. Andrew was a very, very cool lady. And what a story. She definitely has taken the reins of the experiences that she had and owns it. And she's written a lot of books about it. If you want to hear more about what happened, a first-hand detailed account of some of the very specific apparitions and hauntings the Perrin family witnessed in their 10 years living in the farmhouse in Rhode Island, pick up Andrea's book, House of Darkness, House of Light. There's three volumes, volume one, volume two, volume three. All three available at Amazon.com, okay? If you do that, please use the Talk is Jericho Amazon links to make your pouches. You can support this podcast and Andrea Perrin in just one click. In a Flicker is another book that they've written as well. Lots of books written by Andrea about her experiences. Go check them out on Amazon and use the Talk is Jericho links. And you can do that by going to podcastone.com. Click on the Killer Deals button in the top right corner of the page. Then hit the Talk is Jericho button, all right? I got Amazon links for USA, UK, Canada, A. Every time you use the Talk is Jericho links, Amazon kicks back a small percentage to the show to help us cover production costs. You can buy just about anything you can think of on Amazon. And if you do buy something, I want you to become a Talk is Jericho Amazon warrior. Send us what you've bought. Take a picture and post it on the Twitter at Talk is Jericho. I will retweet it and I will follow you as well. What a bargain for you. Podcast1.com. Click on the Killer Deals button in the top right corner of the page. Then hit the Talk is Jericho button. All right. Find all my great sponsors at Podcast1.com through the Killer Deals button as well. ddpyoga.com/Jericho and the DDP Yoga Now app. You got to try that out. And also TrueCar. Go buy all your new or used cars through TrueCar. And don't forget to hit that subscribe button
at iTunes if you haven't already. That way you won't miss any of the great conversations and stories with the guests on this show. So varied, so diverse. Spiwi, huge, huge hit. Damian Sandow, Chad Smith from the Red Hot Chili Peppers, one of my favorite interviews of all time. Go check it out and go ahead and hit that subscribe button. Leave a 5-star rating and a comment or two. I really do read all your comments. Thank you so much for listening. Keep listening for the 60-second AP News headlines coming up next. And Friday, with another heavy show. We go from the paranormal to a tragedy. I'm going to be talking about the Chris Benoit tragedy, talking to Nancy Benoit's sister, Sandra Toffolini. It's her first in-depth podcast interview. She contacted me and wanted to do this on Talk is Jericho, and we really appreciate that from her. She is the sister of Nancy Benoit. She was the nanny for the Benoit family, Daniel Benoit's nanny. And she and I are going to speak in depth about her sister and nephew's murder and what may have caused Chris Benoit to kill himself and his family. Chris Benoit, one of my closest friends. He and Sandy were also very, very close. I'd never met Sandy before, and getting a chance to meet her face-to-face and discuss this this horrible string of events, discuss a little bit about Chris as a person, Daniel as a person, and, of course, Nancy Benoit, Nancy Sullivan, the woman, I think kind of the forgotten person in this whole tragedy. We're going to remember her memory and talk about her. It's a very heavy episode of Talk is Jericho, but it's something that I really felt driven and really felt guided to do. So I will see you on Friday, and we will talk in depth about the Benoit family tragedy. We'll see you then. Be safe, and we'll talk to you soon.
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.